Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You may already know that the Football Ramble have teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choosing when you sign up for a free 1 month trial at audible.co.uk/footballramble. So if you want Why England Lose by Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I Partridge by Alan Partridge, or The Football Men, Up Close with the Giants of the Modern Game by Simon Cooper, then sign up at audible.co.uk/footballramble, or choose from a range of about 60,000 other titles. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep, whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up now.
Hello, mate. Can you give us a ring back? I'm in a room. And there's. I think I messed this up a bit, mate. Luke, give us a ring back, mate. I met some people, and they were part of something that I didn't. I'm in a room now. I'll fuck this up, mate, to be honest. Luke?
Privyet. It's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen, and we are in Kiev. My name's Marcus, and I've got two friends with me, Jim.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
Pete's not here, but hopefully he'll be returned by Saturday's show. But gentlemen, we're in Kiev. It's a lovely time. So what is your favourite thing about Kiev will be the opening question. Go.
My favourite thing I've seen since we've been here. Now, we've discussed this on the show before, that we know in Europe, certain countries, dogs, household pets, family pets, are allowed to sort of leave the family home at night, meet up with their mates, just sort of hang out, run around. We saw it happen. Yeah. We saw this phenomenon live. For me, that's like swimming with dolphins or something like that. I've dreamt of seeing this happen for a long, long time. They were so happy, weren't they? But they were having a great time.
Don't go as close to them as you would with dolphins.
No.
At least keep a street's width distance from them.
I was happy to let them just sort of get on with whatever adventure they had. It's like a dog stag do. They were having such a lovely time.
You never see it in England, ever.
No, but we should bring that to Britain. Let your pets go out and act like cats.
Magnificent scenes.
Yeah.
Luke?
I've got a few things, really. I'm obviously delighted to be here just anyway, but the pubs don't close.
Ever.
So that's good. It's good.
We were in a 24-hour one.
Yeah. And also, what they do, you can order with your beer here, they serve up these big strips of sort of soft pig fat seasoned with garlic and salt, which you eat with your beer. And it's just, I just can't imagine that in the UK.
Better than pork scratchings.
Like a soft, cold, weird version of pork scratchings. Yeah, so I thought that was very interesting.
I wasn't a fan of it, but no, you know,
I didn't care for it either, but I like the idea of it, though.
Yeah.
I probably, in amongst the beautiful architecture, I like what they've done to what I'm guessing is the centre street in Kiev. They've turned it into a sort of a fan park, haven't they?
A big long one.
Yeah, a massive long one with loads of screens. The atmosphere, it's a wonderful place to watch football.
Yeah, definitely. And also the fact that they've got so many screens means it's never really crowded. So it's very comfortable, almost dreamlike.
But it would like changing, you know, the London equivalent would be doing it down Oxford Street or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in South Africa, as we said at the time, in Johannesburg, the Sandton fan park was almost like a mini Hyde Park.
Wasn't it? That's
like a festival almost.
This is a lot more sort of central.
It's a road.
And it's got different ones dotted around rather than one big one.
That's right.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's very good.
But Jim's got the points.
No, Pete's got the points.
Pete's got the points.
He needs them.
Indeed. Come to Kiev. It's a lovely time. But we're going to go to Group A, which is in Poland, to start our roundup. And Greece lost to the Czech Republic 2-1. Two early goals from the Czechs were enough to win it. Juracek and Pilash, I think that's pronounced, bundling the ball over the line. 2-0 up after 6 minutes, yeah. They were away.
I thought Juracek was excellent generally in the game. It was quite a weird game because we just got here and we were flight tired, and it was the first game we watched in Ukrainian commentary. You get this weird thing where you zone out a bit of the commentary and you think, what word did he just say? Oh yeah, no, I don't understand the language.
I do get that a lot when I listen to Mark Lawrenson, though. Yeah. Get it in there early.
Yeah, but yeah, no, obviously the Czechs were a lot better against Greece than they had been against Russia. But they still, you know, when they went 2-0 up, it looked like they could really sort of take it home. But they eased off a little bit. They let Greece in. And
Peter Cech,
I mean, well, Greece had a goal disallowed, which Peter Cech really made a hash of as well. Well, obviously, you know, he's lucked out there, but you've still got to be saving those just in case. He's been rattled by something.
Yeah, Gekas pulled one back, of course, through the Czech error. Mm. And I did worry for Czech because obviously last time in the Euros he made a little bit of an error which cost them dearly. And I thought, if they don't win this game, then I don't want Czech to be at fault.
Yeah. My experience of Peter Czech as an international goalkeeper must just be completely biased, because every time I see him at a major tournament, especially the last couple, he seems to have made errors. Mm. Now, obviously, he can't be making errors all the time like that in qualifying, otherwise they would never qualify. I just wonder what it is about this tournament and the last tournament. She didn't look great against Russia either.
Maybe it's a nervousness thing. So much riding on it when it's for your country.
Yeah, true. But he's playing the Champions League final, you know.
Yeah, I know. But
save penalties and penalty shootouts. He's got a lot of experience.
It's an odd one. It's a very, very odd one.
Indeed it is. But it was a great win for the Czechs. And they needed it.
Yeah, they absolutely did.
They did. Poland drew 1-1 with Russia. Much
that was
better effort.
Really good game, that.
Excellent game, yeah. Kuba's goal was absolutely superb.
Yeah, one of the best of the tournament. Just he hit that so sweetly, so perfectly. It was a bullet with butterfly wings.
It was, yeah.
Captain Kuba.
Yeah, absolutely. The bar we were watching it in, I found it quite hard to ascertain what side the locals were supporting.
Yeah.
But when the Kuba goal went in, everyone got up.
Yeah.
Everyone was loving it.
Well, one thing that's been really interesting about the fan parks as well is how everyone celebrates every goal.
Yeah,
people are really just there enjoying the football. It's great.
Yeah, that's right. Zagoyev scored his third of the tournament.
Yeah.
He's having a great time.
He really is, isn't he? Lovely finish.
Well, of course, Russia scored there eventually after 37 minutes, I think it was. And you thought, well, you feared for Poland, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you don't want to see the hosts
struggle.
And it was nice the way they responded. They came back and scored a great equaliser, as you said. And probably looked, for my money, more likely to go on and win it.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable, considering what happened in the first two games, where Russia was so good, and the Czechs just crumbled against the Greeks. So, much better from them.
I think Poland will beat the Czech Republic.
I think so too, but they need to. If they beat the Czech Republic, they will go through. A draw is not good enough for Poland. They need.
Yeah.
They know what they need to do. Yeah. So we'll see. Unfortunately, there was violence on the streets of Warsaw before that match between both sides of supporters. Because Russia had already been given a suspended 6-point deduction and a fine for their qualifying campaign for Euro 2016 due to their fans' behaviour during the first match of their tournament campaign.
It's an interesting one, that, because obviously the Russian fans didn't really shower themselves in glory. I know there was this Russia Day thing and the rivalry and all that sort of thing. And they set up a firework when Russia scored as well inside the stand. And there was a massive sort of really aggressive flag as well. But James Appel wrote a good piece about the Russia punishment. It's sort of uncharacteristic of UEFA to act so quickly, but I suppose it's during a tournament.
It's been swift and decisive, isn't it?
But he made a great point that if you think about it, because the qualification process next time is opened up to 24 teams, and the top two will definitely qualify, possibly even the best third place, is it really going to affect Russia that much? Because of the seedings and stuff like that. I think he made this sort of comparison that if it had been applied this time, they still would have been okay if it were 2014.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, UEFA at least have to be seen to be doing something. And it's crazy. So I didn't realise this, but so that punishment had already been meted out and then there was more trouble anyway. Because what are the fans doing there?
Yeah. It's a suspended penalty.
Yeah, but isn't the idea that if it flares up again, the penalty will then be enacted for Euro 2016? Yeah. So those fans, they've got to, you know, have a look at themselves like that. It's absolutely ludicrous. Almost like they're mindless thugs.
I don't think if the fans are, you know, after a couple of drinks and are really up for it, that they're going to think, oh, hang on, boys, don't kick off. Yeah. The boys are going to have a 6-point deduction.
Everyone, think about the admin.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, a lot of people have had a little bit of a pop at the Polish authorities for allowing the Russia Day march. But surely, if they didn't allow the march to happen, Russian fans would be even more annoyed. Yeah. And I think if they were cut between a rock and a hard place, really, there's nothing they could do about that.
Yeah, of course. They're going to be angry either way.
Yeah.
It's turned out, in hindsight. Yeah, yeah.
But more worryingly, we had reports from a couple of Swedish fans on Tuesday night that in the Kiev fan zone, there were Russian fans sort of marauding through the fan zone looking for Poles.
Yeah,
you know, and that's actual Polish people, not Poles.
Mm. Yeah, there's loads of them.
Yeah,
Polish so skulls looking to be cracked, basically, wasn't it? It was just worrying.
Yeah, awful scenes, really.
Yeah. But aside from that, you know, we've not seen anything.
No, the atmosphere's been great in Kiev.
Yeah, it's very,
it
very
really has
so.
Been good. And we watched Portugal versus Denmark in the fan park.
What a game. Or game of the tournament road. So far.
Yeah. Fan road or whatever we want to call it. And it was brilliant. And as you said, Jim, you know, there's a lot of... It's just a big football loving, really, there. Anything that anybody ever does... is a lovely ripple of applause.
Yeah, it's like Wimbledon.
It is. It's glorious. Anybody does anything good, a good tackle, a nice bit of skill, a lovely ripple, and we're away. And any goal that goes in is cheered.
I think I can count an awful lot of different nationalities just watching the game there for its own sake, rather than having any sort of vested interest in it. And yeah, it was people enjoying football for what it was and just enjoying seeing goals and that sort of thing.
One group of fans turned up, made a bit of noise, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, that was England fans.
Yeah.
Like a parody of themselves. Yeah. They came from the back of the screens. They weren't even watching
Weren't even watching what was a brilliant game.
Yeah, singing songs.
Ten German bombers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Classic. Awful.
Yeah. The trouble was, though, there was a what looked like a TV presenter with a camera out, and it's just like, mate, leave them alone. You'll only make it worse. And that's what. But there was a lot of other England fans being normal citizens of the world, which is as to be expected. I would say well done, but no, that's what I expect.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a human being. Yeah. but for me, probably the game of the tournament, actually, Denmark versus Portugal. Portugal showed a bit more what they can do, Jim.
Yes, they did. You know, they went 2-0 up, didn't they? Absolutely sort of raced into it, which was... they were very impressive in the first half, actually.
You know,
it was Helder Postiga as well, didn't he? Absolutely battered it into the top from quite close range, and they kind of had the same game plan they did against Germany. They just enacted it far, far better.
That's what Paolo Bento said.
Yeah, and it was an interesting one for Cristiano Ronaldo, wasn't he? He was really, really off of his game.
He was awful, yeah.
Bentner won the duel between those two.
Yeah, which is, I wouldn't have had much chance of you saying that before the game.
No. Was it a duel set up? Is that what Ronaldo
I think that's
about?
What the world world was waiting for.
Well, Sylvester Varela came on and was basically like, right, Cristiano, you're lucky there.
Yeah.
I've got you out of jail.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Ronaldo's 1-on-1 at 2-all was just... that's unforgivable.
No, it was
a 2-1.
It was a
2-1, wasn't it? That was just before Bentner scored the second.
I mean, he had 2 1-on-1s at 2-1. One where he went through, and he didn't look as though he was ever going to put it away. And it was a side foot shot, which was calmly saved by the keeper. But the kind of chance for Real Madrid, which would have ended up top corner.
Yeah.
And then the second one was a glorious chance
where
the ball was played, and he could have used the weight of the pass to just knock it past the keeper. There were so many options, and he thought he'd put it about 3 or 4 yards wide.
It wasn't just his finishing as well, his passing was off. I mean, Germany had a poor game, and I wonder again if it's the pressure, because I think he really does feel the pressure of being Portugal's main man, even far more so than he has ever done at club level, even though that's the case everywhere he's played.
You talk about his passes. I mean, his pass completion was down from 81% against Germany to 69% against the Danes.
I think you can't have it both ways. I think that we've said before, when Deco and a few others were still on the Portugal scene, oh, the thing about Ronaldo is he needs to be the main guy. He doesn't feel like he's the main guy. Now he is the main guy.
Mm.
He seems to be worried about, you know, the pressure and that sort of thing. And it seems that you can't have it both ways. Just get on there and start playing, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see more from him. Because there's another game, at least, that he'll be in. So we'll definitely see more of it. That's just one thing we know about Ronaldo.
Unless he's dropped.
Yeah.
Apparently there were Danish supporters chanting Lionel Messi's name at Ronaldo.
Did you see his comeback?
Well, I don't know if he bit or not. I mean, this is what he said. You know where he was? Talking about Messi, Ronaldo said, you know where he was this time last year? Do you know? He said he was eliminated in the Copa America in his own country. I think that's worse, no?
You know, he scored 82 goals since
then. At least he's not letting it get to him.
No, that's right, that's right. His head's firmly on the next game. We've got to talk about Nicholas Bender, though.
Yeah. Bender and his pants.
The Danes had a great comeback.
Yeah, they did, they really did. It was a real shame for them. I really wanted Denmark to go on and win that game, or at least hold out for the point.
I think everyone in the fan park was just quite happy for more goals.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
But a headed brace. Yeah, we thought maybe a hat-trick of headers. It's so rare that I can't say it. But
Ericsson was a little bit more involved as well. Still, like, he wasn't, you know, absolutely bossing the game, but he had more of the ball than he did in the opening game, so that was nice to see. Yeah, but no, but Bender's in the shop window, isn't he? He's trying to get a move away from Arsenal and Sunderland at the same time.
You're a big fan of the first goal, Luke.
Oh, excellent stuff! Yeah. It's just
Crondelli involved again.
Yeah, you never see, and this hardly ever see, this a headed assist or a headed goal. Yeah,
especially not a beautifully lofted header over the keeper.
Cushion.
Bender almost shrugged it in, didn't he? Like Balotelli did that time as well.
He really ran and sort of jumped like an NBA player, completely unnecessarily, hung in the air for ages and headed it in.
You've got to hand it to him.
He's loving it.
Of course,
brace at a big tournament.
You've got to hand it to the fact that Portugal had absolutely no defenders anywhere near him.
But Portugal have got quite a good defence, actually. I mean, Coentrão's a great fullback, and Bruno Alves and Pepe.
But actually, that's true, but Pepe likes a marauding run forward. Coentrão's very attack-minded. It's a very, very sort of attacking, defensive unit.
Yeah, but they got the win, though. They got the win, which I think they deserved, actually. I do think they deserved. And it was just as well Varela smashed that one in, as you say.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
actually, he set it up with his own air shot.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Did he get an assist for that as well?
Yeah, he should do.
I hope so. It was 3 minutes from time, and then the Portuguese pylon ensued.
Massive pylon.
Well, they needed it so badly. I mean, that saved the tournament, I think.
Yeah, very much so.
I think that with the attacking mindset of a defence, it's just they're trying to get away from Bruno Alves. He's going to eat their children.
Yeah.
They're terrified of him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Varela, like I say, spared Ronaldo's blushes, got them out of jail.
On Bentner as well, it's worth saying, as we were saying about Ronaldo, you know, Bentner's the main man for Denmark. They're kind of set up like that, and he has delivered. You got to give him
some
credit.
Well, they lost the game though.
Yeah, it's true, but you know, he did as much as he could.
Because if they had got a draw, they'd be in great shape.
They're
against Germany.
Would have set the group up really nicely.
Yeah,
got to play the Germans. We got a tweet rather from Daniel Eckeroth, who says. Not a very masculine question, but wouldn't you agree that the Danish kit is by far the ugliest in the competition? I don't think the Danes are particularly ugly.
I don't think it's...
The standard of kits overall is very high.
It's true, yeah.
We'd like the French one, don't we?
Oh,
yeah, the French one's great.
I actually quite like the England with the new red lines. Yeah.
It's not messing about, is it?
No.
And the Sweden one with the sash is decent.
They're away kit.
I'm not sure about the Holland one because it's slightly two-toned.
Orange. I quite like that, you know, they're mixing it up.
Yeah,
I can't think of one worse, apart from possibly the Ukraine one. So it's a decent point.
Yeah, we like the Swedish away one as well.
Yeah,
with the yellow sash across the navy blue. So we're not sure about that, Daniel. But thanks anyway for tweeting in. We've got to move on to Holland versus Germany, though, the big game. Slightly disappointing. I mean, maybe it was because
Holland were
the spectacle. But I mean, you know, the earlier game certainly took some of the limelight. But Holland were indeed very disappointing, and they're only still in it because of that late Varela goal for Portugal. Yeah.
Well, they've just done the absolute sort of cliche Dutch thing of just falling apart the moment they've got to the tournament. Just bickering and arguing, there's infighting. Wesley Schneider came out before the game, said there are too many egos in this squad, which is, as you pointed out, Luke, like ironically shows that he's massively big time, and
he's
clearly got some sort of issue there himself as well. And there's a lot of talk about Robin walking off the pitch on the opposite side and walking around the advertising hall.
I don't think much of that at all. I think that Robin, the game, they needed to get on with the game. He was at the other side of the pitch, so instead of having to
trudge over
all the way across, he's just jumped over. And of course, he's going to be disappointed at being taken off. You know, any professional, for crying out loud, when we played as kids, you know, you'd be disappointed because you want to stay on and influence the game.
Yeah.
I think they've got a couple of problems, you know, from what I can see. And Jim, you're right in what you touched on a second ago. Every time you want to go and make a point about Holland so far in this tournament, you end up just thinking, God, I'm such a cliched idiot. But it is true.
Yeah, but it's the same with England, though. When you talk about England's problems,
again,
it's the same thing, you know. And Holland's, Holland have got far more attacking options and better players than England, but the problem still.
The teamwork is poor, though. Robin has said as well today that there's no link between defence and attack, and there are just gaps everywhere that they're failing to fill.
It's true.
So they're completely aware of their problems, which must be absolutely maddening.
What I think they need to do, you know, I said it before the tournament, is they need to get rid of one of their two holding midfield players.
Yeah.
And he changed it around, took Van Bommel off later on in the game yesterday. But I'd have Strootman in there who can spray the ball around all over the place. He's an excellent passer of the ball. He's your link between your sort of defensive midfield and your attack.
I'd also drop Affolai because I don't think he's affected the game either yesterday or the game before. And I'd put Van Persie out wide on the left where he's played before, and Hanselaar up there. That gives you a chance, you know. Now, I know it's easy to say against Germany because Germany are a good team, you know, and they'll punish you. But Holland also massively needs to up the tempo.
Yeah.
It's too ponderous. And as Robin's rightly said, there's no link-up play there. So they need to step up against Portugal. They need to win and win well. And if they do that, they've got a chance of going through because I think Germany will beat Denmark.
Yeah, I mean, you get a lot of players who are criticised for trying to do everything on their own. It seems like every Dutch player is doing that.
Yeah,
that's right.
Do you think Germany will beat Denmark, do you?
I would imagine they would, although Holland can't... They shouldn't be going into their last game hoping that the Germans give them a helping hand.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure they'd agree with you, mate. Here we are.
But that's the situation. But let's be honest, if Denmark score early against Germany will probably rest a few of their bigger players, and they don't need to win.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is that German squad's so deep, you can still have sort of Marco Reus and Mario Götze in that central midfield, for example, right? So I don't think they're going to... It's not going to be a weak side, is it? They're still going to put up a challenge.
What I was going to say was that if the Danes are a goal up, and they beat Holland, if it's a draw with, say, 15 minutes left, I wouldn't imagine that German side busting a gut to get the winner. Because a point's fine, let's take it easy.
Let's all laugh at Holland.
Exactly.
Lolland.
Mm. Let's be honest, that could easily pan out. Now, I would imagine Germany would beat Denmark, and then Holland needs to beat Portugal, I think, but I think they need a 3-goal swing.
Think of the Germany dynamic, though, within a tournament. You've got to make sure you realise that the players who aren't in the current first 11 for Germany, if they're given a chance, will want to be in that first 11.
Exactly, yeah. And they're very talented players. It's a very deep squad.
Of course. So yeah, I think I said earlier in a piece I wrote there yesterday, Holland have still got every chance of going through because we've seen that happen time and time again in tournament football.
Mm. Well, if a team goes through after losing their first two games, they're very lucky.
Massively,
because usually you lose your first two and you're out.
They've already relied on other results; otherwise, they would be out.
I mean, Holland could have been the first team out of the competition if it wasn't for that Varela goal.
Mad, absolutely mad,
which is incredible. Mario Gomez, deserves a mensch.
Oh, it's brilliant display. That first goal was absolutely beautiful. I hope that sort of puts to bed some of the people who think he's a bit of a donkey, a bit of a sort of like... I don't know why he's got this reputation, Gomez.
He's 40-odd goals this season.
I know, but it still persists. There were a few people on Twitter that were sort of talking about that. They were surprised that he'd scored such a good goal. It's like,
what are you talking about?
Watch him.
I've had arguments.
He does it all the time.
Surprised he scored. Yeah.
I've had arguments on Twitter over and over again this season where people have said every single point they've said to me, I've just... felt like replying with the same answer. He scored 40 goals this season. what, the people who have actually replied to me saying, yeah, but how many would he have scored if his all-round play was better? Yeah, he scored 40 goals!
But his all-round play is fantastic.
Yeah. I think he's a very economical player. He's not necessarily overly adept at some of the stuff that, you know...
There's no glamour to him.
I wouldn't say so. Apart from the fact that he looks like Crispin Glover from Back to the Future. Yeah, that's the only
that's not glamorous.
Yeah, that's true. Not anymore.
The glamour barrel was being scraped, if that's
there.
His second goal was superb as well. Yeah. Schweinsteiger, I think, set up both.
Yeah, Schweinsteiger slipped, was amazing.
He had very little space to do that in. Gomez as well, to take that shot, and just such a weird angle to even be aiming for. We said it before, he reminds me of Ruud van Nistelrooy in a lot of ways, the way he's just so comfortable in the penalty area. It's his garden, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, I've played football at a rubbish level and I'm not an attacking player. But when you loads of players like this, when you get into the goal, even at a very high level, when they get into the goal, they sort of panic a bit.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's to do with experience.
Cristiano Ronaldo did it twice.
We've seen Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain do it for England. Yeah. He's not played for them that much before. He's still finding his feet at that level. He's not as calm and composed. But Mario Gomez just makes it look so natural, so easy. Yeah. And like you say, reminiscent of Van Nistelrooy, ironically for the Dutch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a lot of talk about Mario Gomez. And John Brooks has tweeted in saying, has anyone got a better amount of hair control and hair responsibility than Mario Gomez? I don't know where this responsibility comes in.
Javier Zanetti.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
same haircut for 20 years. No muscle. Yeah,
not at Euro 2012 though. I mean, no. Gomez is taking that crown.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think Gomez certainly has more product than Zanetti.
He's the sort of bloke who redoes it at half time.
Yeah.
Cohen Trowell's got quite an interesting dude.
What a metrosexual side the Portuguese
are. They really are, aren't they?
They are so metrosexual.
They are fabulous.
They look like a boy band.
They do.
A massive boy band.
Yeah, with Bruno Alves in there, everyone thinking, what?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the songwriter. He doesn't look as good as
in front of the camera.
But you often have a bit of a tough looking one, don't you? And that's obviously Pepe. Yeah. He'd be like the boy from Five.
Yeah, Pepe is like Robbie Williams. We went through that skinhead phase.
Okay, well, I was thinking more. Was it abs?
Jay from Five.
Jay from Five.
with the eyebrow thing.
Yeah.
Ain't got no manners because he eats with his fingers.
Yeah, correct.
Just one more tweet on Germany from Adam Huntington, who's asking for a prediction for player of the tournament. He's currently shouting Hummels as he's a juggernaut of composure / ability.
Hummels has been solid. He stepped up. People, as I said before this tournament started, people were saying that does his club form translate to his country form? I think he's been excellent.
Mm. I don't think Germany, a slightly different point, but I don't think Germany have really hit the dazzling heights people expect. And they are sort of growing into the tournament, which is terrifying.
It is terrifying because they've got a clean sheet and three goals. And
they still don't look like they've got out of first gear.
And apart from Gomez, haven't really impressed us that much. Schweinsteiger's been great.
Yeah, Schweinsteiger as well. I think Schweinsteiger's a good shout for player of the tournament, actually, on current form, because he's bossing that midfield.
And Gomez, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, and Zagoyev.
Yeah.
Bentner.
There's a few. They're all there.
There's a lot of twists and turns in this tangled web that is the Euro 2012 to come.
The Euro web. Yeah. So do we think Holland are going to go through? Do you think they're going to make it?
I think they've got a chance, decent chance.
I don't. I think Portugal will.
Do you think Portugal get a draw?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Get the point that they need.
Because Holland have been rubbish. They've been really bad.
I didn't momentarily forget that then. Yeah.
Well, but even if Holland won and Germany won, again, it will go down to goal difference. So they need that. I think it's a three goal swing. Mm. Yes. On to Group C, the second round of matches there will be tonight, and it will be Spain versus Ireland.
Yeah,
the chaps, I do fear for you. We certainly hope that they can do something. And Robbie Keane's been pleading to lead the line.
Yeah, well, Trapattoni said he's not going to drop him. I mean, I think Robbie Keane's in his worst run of form for Ireland in a decade. And he's not scored for his last five games.
Yeah.
And of course his scoring record for Ireland is excellent.
Do you know, you having just said that, I really could see Robbie Keane scoring an important goal against the Spanish. I really can.
Popping up with one. It's going to be interesting to see what sort of system the Spanish play. If they stick with three midfielders up front, it's just confusing, isn't it?
Well,
it's a strange one.
Spain will dominate position as they will do against most teams.
What Ireland have got to do is they need to... what I would do, personally, I'd remove Robbie Keane. I'd put another midfield player in there. I'd have Kevin Doyle, who'll run for you all day up front, leading the line. Difficult job for him, but that's essentially what he's in the team for. And I'd put Darren Gibson in the middle. I think he can hold the ball a lot better.
Well, I'd certainly have Gibson in there, but I think I'd stick with Keane up front. I think there's more chance of him nicking you a goal than Doyle, and I think he can do the same job to a good degree.
Trapattoni didn't want to play, didn't bring McLean on or anything like that, did he, in the last game?
Yeah, see, I think McLean's is an absolute must as well.
He's an exciting player for them, isn't
he? You've got to have some of that, even if you're setting up to frustrate. On. You've got to have you got to have that one conduit to potentially nick you that goal that you need so much.
Well, I think to bring him on against Croatia would have been a good move, but I think against Spain, Ireland will set up more comfortably in a system that they're more used to stifle the opposition and so on and so forth. They will definitely need to do that against Spain. Most teams will need to do that against Spain. And as you say, I think with a front man, a very mobile front man, I'd probably go for Keane as well.
Yeah.
Then they've just got to ride their luck, battle away like they do, and see what happens.
It's that age-old thing, though, isn't it? I mean, as we've discussed in the past, they set up, even if they set up like that way, which they probably will, and even if they get a 0-0, right, they've still got to go out and beat Italy.
Yeah.
At some point, you've got to go out and win a game.
Yeah, but a draw would be a fabulous result against Spain. There's no two ways about it.
And also, if they concede early, what are they going to do?
Well, we'll find out in just a few hours.
My answer would probably be concede again.
And again, and again, and again.
The big one, though, Croatia playing Italy.
Yeah. Croatia were very good against Ireland, but as you've said, Marcus, I think Ireland are one of the weaker teams at the tournament.
They made so many mistakes.
Yeah, they really did. They just let Croatia into it far, far more than Italy will. So this is going to be a very interesting setup, because Italy were as we expected them to be, because of the way they've been under Prandelli. They were a lot more sort of forward thinking and attack minded than against Spain than you would traditionally expect from Italy. And Croatia have a bit about them, so I think that's going to be a really good game. Yeah. I think that's going to be I think there'll be a lot of goals in that.
It could go down to the fact that Italy may need to beat Ireland by more goals than Croatia did if they want to go through.
Yeah.
It could come down to that. I think Italy should have enough to see off Croatia. I was impressed with them against Spain. I thought they did well on a difficult pitch.
There's talk of Tony Christmas starting as well ahead of Mario Balotelli.
Delicious.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to seeing the Italians again.
Yeah.
With that system.
Yeah, they were great.
I'd love to see Di Natale start.
Actually, I love this stage of the tournament. We've all had a look at everyone once, a couple of teams twice. They're all sort of getting into the rhythm of it now. This is one of the perfect times for the tournament.
Do you think they'll play the same system then against?
I think so.
Yeah, I reckon so. Yeah.
Don't break it if it's not broken.
Don't fix it.
Thank you.
That'll do.
I'm too busy thinking of the next link.
Yeah.
which is looking back and ahead to Group D, where Ukraine beat Sweden 2-1, and it was the Zlatan and Shevchenko show. Milan past and present.
Yeah.
Andy Shevs.
And what a present it was.
Well, Shevchenko said Ibra is the best player in the world behind Messi. After the game, because Zlatan,
what is that? Because he let him have a goal at the near post.
Yeah. Zlatan got the scoring underway. He did miss a header.
He did.
Earlier on, but he made up for it.
His body language after he missed that header just seemed to say, "So, brilliant."
I've scored loads of goals before.
He's from that breed of Cristiano Ronaldo type, sort of gets another with everyone else. And yeah, right. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then Ukraine obviously came back, and Shevchenko brace, which just. Sent the country wild. It was they'd gone through to the next round there, and then. But he's really got them all going, hasn't it? The mood in Kiev certainly is jubilant.
Yeah, I absolutely love Kiev. What a story Shevchenko is. Like, yeah. In Kiev, they love him. He started off as a ball boy for Dynamo Kiev, didn't he? He's made his way all the way through. And Jim was sat next to a Ukrainian chap on the plane. Yeah. I didn't hear much about what they're talking about, but what I did hear him say was something along the lines of, Shevchenko is a hero, always.
Always, yeah. Yeah.
Always.
They absolutely love
him. Whereas I was talking to Ukraine, and they said apparently he's a bit dim when it comes to the interview. He's a bit...
Oh, really?
Yeah, really? I've nothing to go on apart from that.
He's not dim when it comes to goals.
No,
I think, again, Luke, you were saying before that he's prolonged his career for the sake of appearing at this tournament, and the fact that he's managed to deliver is just... It's beautiful.
He said himself, this tournament, this tournament's coming up, I've worked so much harder, it's prolonged my career. For him to get a couple of goals in Kiev Stadium, you know, for...
Glorious.
It's a great story.
And it's nice that Zlatan got one as well.
Yeah, give him his one.
Elmander could have had an equaliser right at the end.
I think Sweden look a bit soft-centred. Everyone sort of says that, sort of cliche says they're always quite tough. I don't think they look that tough, to be honest. I think Melberg's passed his best.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, Elmander had a chance, didn't take it. I don't think England should be that worried about Sweden going into that game.
England should be looking to get a result there, a good one.
Yes. England have got to make sure they do themselves justice. You know, this is very much a case of just getting the best out of the system. Because, as you say, I don't think Sweden are there for the taking on that display.
They are.
You know, and Ukraine as well. You know, obviously Ukraine. It was quite a sloppy game.
It was sloppy.
Generally. So there are goals there. As long as England are tight and don't make stupid basic errors, like a lot of teams have been doing,
this is the thing.
It should be all right.
England have got to keep that discipline, like I said before.
Do you think they'll play the same way then?
I think they'll play the same way. Well, I think they'll set up the same way, but they'll just have more attacking freedom. And if England start going, right, okay, let's, you know, here we are, we're the Premier League players and so on and so forth, and go for it, that's when gaps appear, and that's when it all goes back to the same England. If you keep it tight, because Sweden can cause problems. They've got good players, especially attacking players. Yeah. So if England keep it tight and all the rest of it, the gaps that England found in the first half an hour against France, they'll find more against Sweden. England won't tire as quickly, and we should be okay.
Yeah, I don't think he'll change it much. I think he'll play with a reasonably similar team. I read an article today that said that he's actually not trained the team that hard because they had such a difficult one in terms of physical sort of fitness and heat, the heat against France. Apparently the session they did that the journalist in question saw was only 15 minutes.
Right.
Wow.
A few of the players who hadn't featured trained for a bit longer, but he said, like, James Milner looked, who ran more than the player looked.
That was an absolute boxing match of a game.
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah. He put himself out there. He did. He left it all out on the pitch, you know, fair play to him.
The Swedes got in trouble, didn't they, with one of their training
sessions?
They
did, yes. It's been called Bumgate, hasn't it?
They called it that, the sun.
That's the name going around for it. It happened in the Swedish training session.
Was it you? Sir?
It wasn't me that started that, no. But I'm happy to further it. I'm endorsing it now. Yeah. Bumgate. Check it out. It's the reserve goalkeeper, isn't it? One of Sweden's reserve goalkeepers lost a game of piggy where you have to keep the ball in the air. Basically, his punishment was that he would have to... bare his backside and that the team would take shots at his bare anus with the ball, and it's caused an absolute sort of furore back in Sweden, isn't it? So I think a politician as well had said Euro 2012 died a little today. They are so furious with their national team and the way they're representing the country.
I think that I've been to Sweden, it's an amazing nation, wonderful people. I think they're quite a sensitive bunch though, and I think they don't want it to be seen as endorsing sort of schoolyard bullying and stuff like that. But I mean, I think that might be a bit over the top. You know?
Capturing the English stag do mentality.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't have thought you'd be too surprised if you saw that happening in a lot of different football teams.
Yeah,
I remember like the under-12s having the ball kicked at me and stuff like that.
Yeah, Diego Maradona talks about that happening in his book. Although, you know, that's definitely not a barometer of sanity. So let's
no, it doesn't make it normal.
Yeah,
there are apparently there's two factions that have. Been created in the Swedish camp because Zlatan and Olof Mellberg don't get on. And there was Zlatan was a little bit annoyed after the Sweden-Ukraine game that some of the players were waving to their wives and girlfriends when he felt they should have been warming down after their loss to Ukraine. And there are some sources that are saying that Zlatan has his camp and Mellberg has his, and there's a little bit of disharmony.
As much as that is typical Zlatan to sort of pipe up and speak
everyone.
Yeah, but he is captain.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if he,
it's a valid point.
After the game, absolutely, after the game, if he thinks the captain decides that the player should be warmer down, listen, there's plenty of time to be waving and meeting your family afterwards. I think that's a valid point. Yeah. But that, knowing Zlatan, he's probably massively overstated that.
Yeah.
He's just a bit annoyed that they lost because they were 1-1. You know, which, again, is
and he's blaming all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It will have been, you were all dicks, here are the reasons.
Yeah, I scored my goal, what have you done?
You didn't defend your goal.
No.
Indeed. France play Ukraine. Do we see a French win there?
Yes.
I think France are the best team in the group, and I think they should be putting Ukraine to bed, even though Ukraine will be at home, yeah.
Yeah, but the pressure's on France. I think they would have expected to beat England.
Just on this group, it's interesting how, obviously, we're in Kiev right at the moment, and it's Swedish fans everywhere, aren't there?
Yeah.
And
then, we should start just getting our bums out when we see them, to mock them.
Yeah,
they'll hit footballers.
Maybe taken the wrong way, but Sweden have got every game in Kiev, haven't they? So they've probably got a base like set
up. It's interesting how Sweden have got every game in Kiev. I mean, even Ukraine, I think, have played two of their matches in Donetsk. Well, they do.
You think Ukraine would be playing every game in Kiev?
Yeah, it's strange that Sweden have been fortunate, because Donetsk is not a very nice place and isn't set up really well for this tournament. Kiev's a beautiful city. They've hit the jackpot being stationed in Kiev for all of their games. They really have. So well done to the Swedes.
Yeah.
Now let's go to the Ukrainian FA, where their president has entered the racism realm. Grigory Surkish has said that England need to get their own house in order before having a go at Ukraine over accusations of racism. He's referring to the Rio Ferdinand John Terry debate. And he's also saying this on the back that the UEFA have revealed that they are to investigate alleged racist chanting directed at Mario Balotelli during the Spain-Italy match. Balotelli couldn't have heard that, otherwise we would have all probably known about it. But Surkish had this to say about such investigations. He said, "There can be individual cases in our stadiums, but I don't think we should pay attention to these cases. We try to fight this racism thing, but the tournament has started, and I don't think we should talk about racism in Ukraine."
Well, I don't know if that's been mistranslated, but that is so dismissive, isn't it? It's so just like, all right, we're aware everyone else is bothered about this, but it's shut up. It's like as if everyone else is being really overly sensitive, and they're just not accepting that. But again, you know, it could be that that's been kind of badly translated.
Indeed. Well, let's go to another tweet. This is from Harry Sampson, and he says, "Has there been any talk about the ball, the football? The pace of it seems to have caught out a few keepers, made some keepers look average."
I've not seen any reports of that. I don't think it doesn't seem to be anywhere near as sort of...
it's not the Jabalani effect,
is it? No, it's certainly not as sort of strange as the Jabalani.
Which is refreshing. Effect. It's the first time in years there's not been people moaning about the ball.
Oh, hang on, Peter Cech has been on the line. Yes, definitely. The ball is rubbish. It is rubbish.
I can remember in France 98 when David Seaman talking about the ball, and he said you'd boot it up in the air, and he said it was almost like a beach ball. That was in 98.
Yeah.
I think what happens is, and I think we may have touched on this in the past, they always, because of the press attention around a new a tournament, they always launch a new ball. It's never normally a ball that the Premier League decides to use. I do believe they're offered the chance to use it for the season, but the Premier League have got their own... thing in place. I'm only speaking from behalf of, obviously, because I'm English, I know more about the Premier League. But they never take it up because they've got their own ball they want to do a deal with. And then when it comes to a tournament, no one's used the ball properly.
Yeah.
And then everyone starts complaining about it. But the current one seems to be okay from what I can see.
Flipping egg. Next tournament, let's have a mitered out on Moldmaster. Yeah. Let's see how they all get on with that.
On the cold day off the thigh.
It's the classic British cliche, isn't it?
Yeah.
Get the Adidas Tango back. A plastic Adidas Tango.
It is a Tango.
The proper old school.
Oh, yeah, okay, right.
The black and white panels.
This one's the Tango 12.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'd love to see a Moldmaster.
Get it on there.
And what would happen? You would Tiki Taka, would that go out the window?
Yeah, we'll have to, yeah.
Andy Carroll would love it.
Let's have him on there with a Moldmaster and a Sunday League pitch.
See how good they are.
See how many ankles get rolled. Oh, speaking of ankle rolls, we saw a guy massively stack it on the street yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. That was a highlight as well, actually.
Yeah,
we were sat in the window of a bar, and it was just slightly below ground level, so we got an absolute box office seat for a quite spectacular stack.
Yeah, it was an absolute burn. Yeah.
So it went.
Another highlight as well was I thought I saw Giovanni Trapattoni going for a jog at about 6 in the morning when we were coming back. And Jim
that
said,
is some jog.
And Jim said to me, I don't even need to look to know that's not true.
He's run all the way from Poland. He's trying to set an example to his players.
It was a lookalike. We've seen a few lookalikes.
Yeah.
Olive Melberg's younger brother.
Yeah.
Ukrainian Pete.
Yeah.
Ukrainian Pete. Yeah. John Malkovich was a good one. Yeah. And the guy was American as well.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Marvellous.
Yeah. I think I actually saw Jake Livermore. The real Jake Livermore in the airport was when you said you thought you saw Frimpong.
I think I saw him with Frimpong, yeah. Mm. I don't know where they were going. I've not seen him in Kia.
Read all about it if that's true. Yeah. Before we go, we've got to talk about a few Premier League stories. Because Spurs have parted ways, i.e. sacked Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It brings a smirk to your face, doesn't it?
Can I just be the first to say 6 months ago, if you had told me Roy Hodgson will be the England manager and Harry Redknapp will be unemployed, I'd have been delighted.
You'd have been, hang on a minute, I thought Christmas was in December. Yeah,
sometimes football just gets it wrong. Not nearly often enough for my liking.
Marcus, no. 6 months ago was December. But
well, no, he said if 6 months ago you'd have told me.
In June, yeah. Like, you know the point.
I did not see that coming. I really didn't. Apparently, Levy just really ran out of patience with Redknapp, and all that stuff he'd said about, well, you know, people talk about the Champions League. I don't think the players are as bothered about it as people make out. It's just covering his own back for the absolute collapse at the end of the season that Tottenham had. And obviously, people talk to the speculation linking him with the England job as to why that happened. It doesn't excuse it.
No.
And you know, I think a lot of people, pro Redknapp people, would have thought it would have excused it. It's like, oh well, that's why that's happened. He'll have a better go next time. Apparently not.
A journalist who remained unnamed said that Daniel Levy is absolutely furious when he didn't get into the Champions League.
I bet he was. They led for such a long time.
And Redknapp even tried to do the old Paul Stretford in his camp to get the contract negotiated. Well, didn't work.
Well, because they were unlucky with fourth place being what it was. But third was there for the taking.
It's such a good position. Such a good position.
I was about to say, with regards to Daniel Levy, you'd imagine he commands respect.
Of course, he's
a tough cookie.
He's a shrewd operator.
And so, if Harry Redknapp often tries to play him off in the press, and he did with the Champions League business recently, if he turns up to Daniel Levy's office with, there's a lot of words I want to use, but I won't. With Paul Stretford, who is a silly sausage to say the least, Daniel Levy's going to look at this and go, "Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, bloody really?" And apparently, Redknapp turned up and was trying to hurry him and say, "Look, tie me down to a 4-year deal, otherwise it'll unsettle the players." Levy's not having any of that.
No.
Levy's thinking, I've unsettled the players loads of times before. But we've got loads of managers here, don't worry about it.
Sorry, Harry, you're not a Wheeler dealer, is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Paul Stretford.
But if he was a decent Wheeler dealer, he wouldn't need Paul Stretford, would he?
Paul Stretford.
Yeah, it's poor.
Dear, oh dear. Better news in London, though, is that Di Matteo has signed a 2-year deal with Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm glad he got a 2-year deal. There was talk it'd be a year-long rolling contract, which I think would have immediately added unnecessary pressure on him.
I'm delighted for him, isn't he?
Yeah. Of course he's. He won the Champions League in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And Michael Laudrup's been linked to the Swansea job.
Be nice to see him in England, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine the Swans? Imagine telling them a couple of years ago we're going to play that kind of card. Michael Laudrup will be in charge one day.
Yeah. Michael, who? Yeah.
Brian's brother.
I'm only joking. The city of Swansea is a very, very good footballing city with a strong tradition. I'm sure they knew Michael Laudrup was.
Yeah, but they didn't think he would be in charge.
No, absolutely not.
But and he might not be. But it's good that such a man has been linked with a job, and I think he'd probably do an okay job.
I think he would. It's also worth noting that David Moyes has been hotly tipped to replace Harry Redknapp at Tottenham. Mm. Been an interesting one. 10 years he's been at Everton. Obviously, there's this whole thing: would he be? How well would he do with money? You know, because he's done so well on such a limited budget at Everton. I mean,
will the fans clamour for Big Martin Yard back?
No.
Okay.
I think that it's a great. It would be a really, really intriguing appointment to have David Moyes there. As you've touched on, Drew, he's been at Everton for so long, we've never really known what he'd be like with the bundles of money. And Spurs have got money.
Yeah, they're back to the hilt.
Yeah, but I imagine he'll probably raid Everton for a couple of players as well. So it's sad times for Everton, really.
Sad times. Well, there we are. That's it for this pod. We'll be back again on Saturday with more Euro news and whatnot.
Yeah, we'll be going to the England-Sweden game, so we'll report back on Saturday about that.
But the website is very active at the minute, thefootballramble.com.
Loads of stuff on there. So while you're waiting for us to come back on Saturday, thefootballramble.com, get yourself over there.
Get yourself over there. And if you want to get in touch with us, it's probably best to tweet.
Yeah, tweet us, at footballramble, or you can email us as well if you want to. It's a show at thefootballramble.com. Yeah, and we'll look forward to hearing from you.
Look forward indeed. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Try Pete again.
Yeah, alright, hang on a sec. No, it's fine, still off.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.